Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to another edition of Life Behind Bars. I'm Noah Rothbaum, the Daily Beast, half full editor. Joining me, as always, is my colleague and co-host, David Wondrich.
Howdy.
How are you doing today, Dave?
I'm doing very well. And yourself?
Pretty hot, I'm not going to lie. Summer is in full effect in New York.
It's disgusting here.
And I have to say, you know, once the air conditioners go on, all I'm craving is a Tom Collins. It is, for me, the drink of summer. I mean, there's nothing else that fits the bill.
Especially a really big one.
Yes. My problem with many of them is too small.
Back in the 30s, Charles H. Baker, the great drinks writer and traveler and raconteur and everything, had a rule that, you know, they should be made in like 24-ounce glasses. And I like them in a 24-ounce glass myself. Gin, lemon juice, sugar, soda water, ice. And like, I mean, if I could get it in a quart glass, I would want it in a quart glass.
I mean, I think the genius of it is that, you know, it has the soda water, which, you know, I crave all the time anyway. The citrus is also really good for the hot weather. Mm-hmm. A little sugar kind of rounds it out. And then you have the gin and the botanicals. And sort of gin is, I don't know. I mean, obviously we drink gin all year in all types of cocktails, but there's something about the warm months.
It's very refreshing.
Particularly ironic since, I mean, this is a British drink, and gin, you know, for the most part is a British spirit. Yeah. And in Britain, they have what, like one day of summer, like, you know, 1 week of summer.
The last time I was in London on a hot day, people were taking their shirts off and sitting against buildings in the sun. Right. They were like, oh, my God, there's sun.
Right. You know, I remember, like
business people.
I remember being in Scotland like 10 years ago, over 10 years to research my first book. And it was this crazy heat wave, you know. It wasn't that hot. It was basically a typical July day in New York.
82.
And there were all the news reports and the front page of all the newspapers were literally stories about what sunscreen was and how to apply it and why it's necessary. And I was like, this is clearly an aberration here. But for whatever reason, they somehow came up with, I'd say, arguably the best summer drink in that one day a year.
I mean, I would certainly put it in the top five summer drinks because I'm a big fan also of, for instance, the Gin Ricky with gin, lime juice, and soda.
Sure. Which I would say, like, same tree, right?
Same, without the sugar.
Right.
Yeah. Or, you know, there's also, I guess, the Caipirinha.
Right.
Which is very good.
I would say that general formula.
They're all variations of punch.
Right.
And they go back to this idea of, you know, punch was originally citrus with sugar.
Right.
And booze and water. That's delicious and refreshing. But
absolutely.
The Collins with the soda water makes it extra refreshing.
Yeah.
And big chunks of ice in it.
Obviously, that same formula could work with whiskey and is good.
Yeah, there's a whiskey Collins out there. That's okay.
But there is something about, you know, the clear spirits, you know, whether it's gin, vodka, tequila, you know, cachaça, there's something about it in the summer.
Back in Esquire, during World War II, they wrote up in their goings on about town, the guy dropped in at the bar of the Commodore Hotel, which was across from Grand Central.
Oh, yeah.
One afternoon in 1944, one hot summer afternoon. And he talked to the bartenders at the end of the evening rush, and they had served 1,100 Tom Collinses.
That says about all.
This is before universal air conditioning, so that was what you had.
You know, the Gin Ricky is called air conditioner in a glass, right? I mean, and I think it could be extended to the Tom Collins.
Oh, hell yeah.
You find a little bit of shade, you mix one of these up or picture. Mm-hmm. I think part of it also lends itself that you can make them in kind of big batches.
You can.
Obviously, you don't want to
keep the bubbles go flat, though.
Right, that's true. Or you could top it off. You know, you don't want to keep exerting yourself on a really hot day.
No, you don't want to move at all.
I also feel like the Tom Collins is very quintessential East Coast drink, you know, like Connecticut, you know, parts of New England, you know.
Yeah, it's a WASPy establishment drink to a good certain degree.
Do you think that other parts of the country, you know, I mean, obviously you can get a Tom Collins in other parts of the country, but do you think that it was as popular, you know, in California?
Well, I think for a while it was, but then it kind of retreated back to its natural habitat, which is, you know, Westport, Connecticut.
As you say, yeah.
And Kos Kob and, you know, maybe Manhasset, Long Island,
exactly.
and places like that.
And because of that, I think it's sort of been a little bit forgotten almost in the rebirth of the cocktail, like because it was so popular in certain parts of the country that I think some of these drinks, they became popular because they essentially died, right? And for some of them, you know,
they became fetish drinks.
Right. And it's like, you know, like rye whiskey, in order for it to become popular again, it almost literally had to disappear. And it's like people love a rebirth. And with the Tom Collins, it never totally went away, so it didn't necessarily need a rebirth.
Yeah, it was still being made during the disco years.
Right.
You know, I saw people drinking them. I rarely see people drinking them now in craft cocktail bars. With air conditioning, a lot of these summer drinks kind of lost a lot of their rationale, like the mint julep, which was all ice.
Right.
You know, it's like nobody drinks mint juleps anymore because you don't need to. You don't need all that ice.
And that was very decadent, you know, sort of like a real luxury because ice itself was a rare commodity
and hard to come by everywhere, you know, and
basically Europe and America you know, all the time.
Yeah.
I think you'd still be hard pressed to get as much ice in a mint julep in certain parts of Europe today.
I think there are whole towns in Europe that don't have enough ice to make a single mint julep in the American style.
It's true.
I've been in bars in Scotland where they have a little box that they put on top of the bar, and that's their ice for the night.
Yeah,
it's about
everybody.
The size of a bread box.
Right, exactly. Yeah,
you get one cube.
I think I love what the mint julep is, that final little pat, right? The little, like that last scoop after the drink is made. Just to make it look domed, you know, little...
Just extra ice.
Exactly, that little perfect snow cone top, you know, I think bartenders would have a fit too.
That would be so wasteful. It's like, that was, you know, that was our ice for the whole night.
Unbelievable. Like, oh, you also wanted ice? You didn't want me to use it for my mint julep?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry about that. Obviously now, you know, it's almost universally made with gin, right?
Yeah.
I mean, whether it's, you know, American.
Like London major, Dry Gin.
London Dry, usually. Traditionally, though, it wasn't always made with gin.
No, I mean the history of the Tom Collins is actually really interesting because it goes back to a very, very rowdy period in London history.
Right.
It was introduced from New York, this idea of mixing gin punch with seltzer water.
Right.
And it was this guy, Richard Price, who was the manager of the Covent Garden Theater. But he was a New Yorker and a vulgar man. He liked to swear and strut around and curse and throw things and was kind of a pain in the ass. But he had run the Park Theater here in New York, and he goes to London to run this theater and doesn't do well at that. And he ends up being the manager of the Garrick Club, which was a club founded for aristocrats to hang out with actors.
Right.
You know, so they could kind of hang out with the fast, sporty people, you know, and it was a place for them. And it still exists. I've never been able to get in there, but, you know, I'm not fancy enough.
Well, maybe this podcast will engender an invitation for both of
will.
Us.
And we'll go there and we'll drink gin at the Garrick Club. But anyway, Price was a New Yorker, and he brought this idea of making gin punch with cold soda water.
Right.
And people in London were like, what?
Cold soda water, I mean, obviously has been around for a long time.
Well, soda water was a fairly new thing as a commodity. You know, there were mineral springs
Exactly. Like in France, you know,
And you would go there to drink the waters.
Exactly.
But like actually pre-bottled stuff was kind of new then. And the ice was an American thing.
Absolutely.
And he said, you know, the water's got to be heavily iced.
Yeah.
And that's how you cool your punch. You pour this really cold soda water in with gin. We don't have his pretty close to his original recipe. It was made with Geneva originally because he was an American and that's what we drank for gin.
Right.
We didn't drink English gin. We thought that was kind of crap. We liked our Dutch gins, you know, the really malty ones.
Which was almost like halfway between whiskey and gin. Right?
Yeah.
Like
it's a lightly flavored whiskey.
Right.
And so originally it was with Geneva, and then he learned to use Old Tom gin, which was the highest quality English gin available and the strongest. and, you know, mixed it with some lemon juice and soaked the lemon peel a little bit in the gin.
Even something like the oleosaccharum where, you know, you're using the lemon peel and you're getting the oils out and the sugar. Probably was because lemons were really expensive, right?
I mean, so lemons were expensive,
You wanted to use literally, forget nose to tail, like you wanted to use, you know, stem to pit, you know, for these, for, you know, like you wanted to use every little bit of the fruit.
And it was also a little bit of a master's touch, you know, it was good. Lemons, you want to get everything you can out of it. And they didn't use a lot of juice. They also used maraschino to sweeten it, which was the, that was like the Saint Germain of its day. It was the hot new liqueur or whatever, you know, Ancho Reyes of its day. So it was the trendy liqueur. So,
and maraschino obviously is like cherry liqueur.
But funky.
Not sweet. Like, I mean, it's sweet-ish, but not like...
Yeah, it's not sugary because there's so much funky taste in it.
They also use a lot of the, I think, the pits, right? Of the
pits and even the leaves and the stems. They use all kinds of stuff to make it. And that gives it this sort of musky taste.
Exactly.
And so it was a little bit of maraschino in there, some little bit of sugar, lemon peel, lemon juice, and
getting thirsty.
And chilled soda. That's the original one.
Right.
But then it kind of goes out and about in London and circulates. And one of the places that specializes in it, Limmer's Hotel, this guy Limmer had founded it. He was a waiter in coffee houses in the 18th century. And those coffee houses were very rowdy places.
Right.
They weren't just drinking coffee. They were drinking punch. They were drinking wine. They were drinking beer. They were gambling. They were doing all this crazy stuff.
Why do you think they were called coffee houses? If it was...
Well, because they started with coffee.
Yeah.
And they weren't ale houses and they weren't inns or taverns.
Right.
They were kind of a third place. And originally in the 1600s in London, they didn't regulate spirits because English didn't drink spirits. So it was something new. So at the coffee houses, when they wanted to get alcohol in, they didn't get beer or wine, which had needed licenses. They got in punch.
That was going to be my answer too. But I want to see if we had the same answer to that question.
Exactly.
No, not at all.
But anyway, so this Limmer's Coffee House, a place that was frequented by army officers who were all gentlemen, you know, had titles and things, and all these dukes and earls, and any tradesmen or common people who tried to get in would get thrown out by the one-legged doorman. Right. He lost his leg at Waterloo.
Hey? All right, man.
So, you know, fair enough.
I remember your article that you wrote for the Daily Beast about the Tom Collins, I guess maybe last summer.
Last summer.
And I think, you know, you make the comparison that...
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
They're kind of like, not unlike the bros that you'd find in Connecticut, sort of waspy bros.
Yeah.
Of like,
super entitled.
Right. So it's
willing kind of, to misbehave.
It's interesting how the Tom Collins has found its audience no matter what century
it's in.
It attracts a certain type of.
The difference between these bros is because they were in the army, every once in a while they'd be called upon to stand in front of their men and get shot at.
Wow.
Which, you know, and that was the one thing you had to do as an officer. You had to stand in front.
Right.
You know, you had to lead from the front. And that's different from our bros who are not really good at that kind of thing.
Right. And I think also you pointed out in that story that sometimes when they were deep in their, I guess, coffee cups, occasionally somebody would pull out a pistol and...
Yeah, there was marksmanship in the bar at Limmer's.
I was going to say the clock that was a frequent target.
Yeah, the Marquis of Waterford shot a hole in the clock, and they left the bullet in there. He also used to shoot at the church tower across the street. What else did he do? He shoveled coals from the fireplace onto the carpet.
Oh, right.
Which was a nice thing to do.
Totally.
He also hired, I believe, a Scotch bagpiper to walk into the room, play the bagpipes as loud as he possibly could while taking all of his clothes off.
Basically, Limmer's was the first fraternity house.
Yeah, completely, Yeah. Maybe not the first, but it was
a big
one. Yeah. And the guy who was presiding all over this was a guy by the name of John Collin,
right.
who was born around 1870, died in 1843. And John Collin was a Londoner and a jolly soul who he had to be, you know, to put up with all these assholes. And he was known for his mixtures, and one of them was his gin punch.
Right.
And by the 1860s, that gin punch, you know, after he's dead, got a slang name of John Collins. You know, it was his specialty and he was popular. And there was a song about him or a poem.
So should we actually be calling it, do you think, the John Collins instead of the Tom Collins?
Well, there are two Collinses.
Right.
The,
like any good story.
The John Collins, when it got over here, was made with Genever.
Right.
Which is what we drank, this Dutch-style gin. Like we said, you know, that was what we liked in America. We didn't like that English stuff. But we were starting to learn to like the English stuff. And in the 1870s, it's first here over here in the 1860s. 1870s, it really catches on. And Old Tom Gin is catching on. So people start making it with Old Tom Gin, this lightly sweetened London Dry, basically.
Got it.
And then there's an American bit of bro-ish sporting life that has to do with this too, is in 1874, somebody came up with a bar game. Back then, if you went to one cocktail bar or one bar to have a cocktail, you'd go usually along the cocktail route in your town, which was a string of bars. Like here in New York, if you're in the East Village, you might go to Death and Company and then PDT and then, you know, a couple other bars and make your way around the area.
Pouring ribbons,
pouring ribbons, exactly. And that would be fun for everybody.
Absolutely.
So back then, you'd see somebody come in, and if they weren't in on the joke, you'd say, hey, Noah, you just missed Tom Collins. He was saying some terrible shit about you. I can't believe it. You should go find him. Right. And it's like, what do you mean go find him?
Right.
And well, he just went to Pouring Ribbons.
Right.
And so you'd go over to Pouring Ribbons and the bartender, and you ask the bartender, hey, do you see this guy Tom Collins here? He's saying terrible stuff about me. And the bartender would kind of, you know, wink at the other people at the bar and go, oh, yeah, he just went down to PDT.
Right.
You know, and then you'd go down to PDT and then they'd send you over to Swift's, and it would go on until you caught on. That was like a big joke. It sounds really dumb, but that was before.
I can only imagine how angry the person would be when they got to the third or fourth bar.
Yeah, and they caught on that they've just been running around like an idiot.
And that's probably how the clock got a bullet in it, but yeah, that's a different story.
That's a different story. So anyway, that thing kind of influenced the name of the drink, too, because that was really popular. There were songs about, you know, chasing for Tom Collins and all that kind of stuff.
Maybe we should restart that game. I mean,
yeah, I know.
Forget about icing people with Smirnoff Ice. We should be telling them, this Tom Collins guy was right here. Yeah.
We'll have to come up with a new name.
Yeah.
We'll work on it.
Like the Count Negroni was just here.
Yeah.
Very mean. Like he's not very nice man.
Not very nice.
And he said some terrible things about you. It's very bitter. He's very bitter.
Very bitter.
Very bitter, this man.
By then, you know, the Tom Collins was kind of established. And it became if you look through like 19th century bartenders' guides, the John Collins was with Genever, the Tom Collins was with the Old Tom.
And I've seen also like Jan Collins, you know, like people, I don't know, I guess people like riff off of that, you know, obviously that would be, I guess, with Aquavit or
yeah, and
know,
then there's Wayne Collins, my friend Wayne Collins was one of the top bartenders in the cocktail revival in England, and he had his version. Eventually, Genever disappeared in the American market, and the John Collins became the bourbon version.
Oh, ultimately, if you asked for John Collins, it would be made with.
Yeah, I'm talking until recently.
Yeah. Know,
in the old bartender days.
Right, exactly.
Like bartender. I want a John Collins.
Get down
there. There you go, bub.
The I.W. Harper, blow it off, Four Roses.
Yeah, exactly.
Pour it in.
Yep.
Little, fake lemon juice from the little plastic lemon.
Exactly. Then you'd put some foam on top, some like head.
You know? I was thinking maybe like a little bit of sweet and low, you know, just a little stir it up.
Yeah.
Mm, delicious.
Those were the days.
What is your preferred Tom Collins recipe?
I go with 2 ounces of a really big London Dry gin, like, you know, the Tanqueray's, the Beefeaters of this world.
You want it to stand up.
Junipero is very much like that.
Like as the ice melts, the water,
I'll put that in a 16-ounce column glass, not in a pint glass. Like I like it to be tall and narrow. If I could do a big one, a really big one, you know, that would be 4 ounces of gin in like a 24-ounce glass. But for the 2 ounce, for the regular one, I do the maybe the juice of half a lemon, so 3/4 of an ounce. I usually don't, you know, I like to just squeeze the lemon in there.
Yeah, exactly.
And however much juice that is, that's fine for me. Stir in a little bit of sugar. And I build it in the glass. I don't like to shake it first. I think that's unnecessary. Bunch of ice and fill it up with very cold soda.
Yeah. Nice hard carbonation. You want that kind of exactly. The harder the better.
Yeah.
You know, fresh little bottle or can or something. I don't know. It's kind of like I was just in Japan and obviously they're kind of obsessed with highball culture. And I think that Tom Collins is kind of very similar to kind of a highball, right?
Like
a similar idea where it's ice. You know,
it just has the citrus in it. Citrus and sugar. But
we're in a bar, not a very fancy sort of bar restaurant that people would go to, like right after work to grab, you know, a little bite and a drink. And the highballs came in, I have to say, some of the largest glasses I've ever seen with handles, like something from, you know, Oktoberfest.
Yeah.
You know, and it had like one of the Suntory, you know, the one of their blended whiskey, you know, labels on the Kukuman or whatever, you know, the original one. And giant glass, like, I mean, maybe 60 ounces. I don't know. It's like one of those like that you get at Starbucks.
Yeah.
Usually equal to the size of an average person's, you know, stomach, like how much you can. And it was just full of ice. And it was, you know, probably, I don't know, 4-to-1, you know, club soda to whiskey. It was perfect for, you know, warm.
Yeah.
I think kind of Tom Collins, the same way for me, like, you know, if it's really hot out, you know, even more, you know, ice, more club soda.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I like a lot of soda.
Yeah,
you know, maybe. I like it. It's just a big, huge drink, you know.
Yeah.
And that's fun.
Yeah, I'd say it's like the temperature goes up, the amount of like all the other ingredients I, you know, keep adding and keep the gin around 2 ounces or so or 2.5 ounces. And that's something kind of just sort of lingers on, you know, through the
afternoon.
Yeah,
and then you hydrate, cools you off, and you watch the glass sweat, you watch yourself sweat.
My one pet peeve about it is sometimes you get it and there's a nice thin layer of sugar at the bottom, like almost like a fish tank sand.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's just like, you got to stir it up like a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it really takes some stirring.
Yeah, or even simple
syrup. I mean, usually I'll start with the lemon juice and the sugar together.
Yeah, exactly.
And stir those first.
Right.
And that solves that problem pretty well.
You know, after, you know, like somebody just sort of pours it in, the sugar in afterwards and settles and you get that little.
You don't want the alcohol in when you're dissolving the sugar because sugar doesn't dissolve in alcohol. So you start with the lemon juice and the sugar, stir them up really good, and then pour in the gin, add the ice, soda,
top
it off. So, you know, you can garnish it if you want. I'm not a big believer in garnishes. It seems a little wasteful to me.
Yeah.
I don't snack on them.
Would you ever put Angostura in, like a little
bit? You can top it with Angostura. Yeah. Is great.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a great little addition. There are other ones you could do. You can use syrups.
Sure.
That's the home ec guys of the 1950s were big on that. Like Esquire magazine used to always have like, use a green syrup and you'll have a absolutely beautiful Tom Collins.
What was the green syrup made of?
You can use mint syrup or just like simple syrup with green food coloring.
Right, of course.
Well, who doesn't want that?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Totally going to do that.
Put some blue curacao in. That doesn't hurt.
That would be amazing. Yeah. Turn into basically a Pussy Cafe where you're layering different sugar syrups and then let the person stir it up themselves.
Exactly. Or not. Just drink down the syrup.
Well, the Angostura, I love putting a little bit even like Dark and Stormy, different drinks. There's something about it.
Yeah, like a swizzle, which is also from the same family of drinks where you use a swizzle stick to stir it all up. But it's basically gin or rum with lime juice, sugar or syrup, and again, you know, lots of ice and water, soda water. Those were often topped with like a lot of Angostura bitters.
Yeah.
You know, you get a nice layer of red on top, which I kind of like.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially, you know, when it's hot, it's nice.
Today is definitely a Tom Collins day, I have to say.
Oh, yeah.
So I think
hot and humid.
Hot and humid. You and I should put on our seersucker suits. make fans out of the Wall Street Journal's, you know, the stock section.
Yep.
Stir up some Tom Collins's.
Stir up some Tom Collins's.
Sit on the porch or the stoop.
Talk about banking.
Exactly. That's what we love to do.
Yeah.
I love, you know, ETFs, you
Those
know.
Those interest rates aren't adjusting themselves, Noah.
I love it when Dave talks about balloon mortgages. You know, that's, we save it all for the summer. So that we're going to start another podcast just for July and August about interest rates. I'm sure it'll be very, very popular.
It'll be the Daily Beast Interest Rate Observer and Gin Companion.
Exactly. Look out for that soon. Yeah. And look out for other episodes of Life Behind Bars. Cheers.
Cheers.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.